So eating and drinking the right things can help us look younger as well as staying out of the sun, but can they actually make us live longer lives? Professor Nick Wareham joins us now. He's the director of the Medical Research Council's Epidemiology Unit at Addenbrooke's Hospital. Now, he's been part of the European Prospective Investigation of Cancer Study, better known as EPIC, and in January this year they announced that there are four simple things you can do to extend your life by an estimated 14 years. So, Nick, thank you ever so much for joining us. First of all, what are these four things that people can do, and why do they have such a large impact on how long we live?
Well, they're smoking, drinking in moderation, not being totally sedentary, so having sufficient physical activity, and eating a diet that's rich in fresh fruit and vegetables.
I guess when you say smoking, you mean not smoking.
Not smoking, absolutely.
Okay, and so why do they have such a big impact?
Well, they individually, they are risk factors for a whole range of chronic diseases. Indeed, many of the diseases that you were talking with Steve about earlier, cancer, cardiovascular disease. And these are the disorders that really shorten our lives and for which we have evidence that that shortening is modifiable. Now, in the study you're referring to, this is observational data. It's not an experiment. We haven't had a group of people who we've, you know, randomised to be smokers or non-smokers. So these are observations in a very big population-based study. But they are robust. And really, what was surprising about the observation is not the fact that smoking and drinking too much are bad for you. It's really the magnitude. And it's the scale of the effect on longevity that we observed.
So these are obviously very difficult things to study. You have to rely on people being honest. And obviously, if you get a secret smoker, he could squiff your data completely.
Sure.
But how do you actually study these? How do you try and look at all of these different lifestyle effects? And then it's obviously very difficult to say these people are healthier. It's easy to say these people lived longer. So how do you pull all this data together?
Well, what you have to do is you collect a very big cohort study. So that's a cohort is a population of people who you recruit at baseline, and you hope that they're free of disease at that point. And you ask them questions, or you may monitor different behaviours. And then you wait, because the key thing is elapsed time. And over time, some people go on to get particular diseases and some people, unfortunately, die. And in the study that we reported earlier this year, we started out with a cohort of 25,000 people in Norfolk who'd helped us in the beginning of the 1990s and who were then followed up over time to see who went on to get disease. And really what the essence of epidemiology is that scale, very big studies, and then probability. Because whether or not someone goes on to get disease is a process that involves an element of chance. And clearly some people have certain lifestyles and do very well. Some people may have the same lifestyle and do very badly. But on average, one can estimate the probability of an event occurring. And that's what you do in epidemiology.
So epidemiology is obviously quite a powerful technique. But a lot of people would say, based on their personal experience or anecdotal evidence, they may have an uncle that smoked and drank a bottle of whiskey every week.
Sure.
And lived till 108.
Sure.
So are these people taken account of, or do you try and go for the sort of common denominator? Are you looking at the average, or are you looking at the normal?
Well, we're looking at everybody.
Right.
So for everybody who's got an Uncle Tom who has those characteristics, unfortunately, there's probably an equivalent number of people who have an Uncle Frank who might have, you know, lived an exemplary life in terms of the behaviours we've talked about, but was cut short by disease. So one's looking at sort of average probability. And unfortunately, most people tend to remember the anecdotes that are an excuse for unfavourable lifestyles.
And one of the things that you've been working on is how activity in earlier life affects likelihood of things like type 2 diabetes or other diseases associated with age. What have you found so far?
Well, physical activity is probably a very, very powerful determinant of many of the diseases that we're seeing rising today, and is clearly a major factor in why, as a population, we're tending to get more overweight. And overweight by itself is the single biggest determinant of type 2 diabetes. I mean, we operate in terms of what's called relative risk in our game. So that's comparing the risk of a disorder in one group compared to a comparison group. And if you were to take obesity as a risk factor, you know, the relative risk is something like 60 for someone who is overweight and obese compared to someone who is a normal weight for type 2 diabetes. It's very, very strong risk factor. And one of the reasons we focus on that is in part because it's an important factor, but in part because it's relatively easy to measure. And the problem about physical activity is incredibly difficult to measure. And we rely on self-report. We ask people about their physical activity. And the bit of activity that people can remember is the part that usually involves putting on Lycra or going to a gym or something very specific and circumscribed like that. In fact, what we're finding is that part is important, but that part doesn't actually occupy much of our life. And most of us spend most of our energy in a rather insensible way, just walking around or standing rather than sitting. And we've been developing techniques for studying that aspect of activity. And it seems that that part is really important for determining obesity and diabetes risk. I guess the importance of that is not just as an observation, but what it says about what you should do about the problem. Because promoting sport and encouraging exercise, absolutely critical. But at a population level, probably we need to be also thinking about how do we just encourage people in an insensible way to waste more energy. And that means sort of re-engineering society. It means putting staircases in more prominent positions, perhaps moving escalators and lifts to less prominent ones, things like that.
And so epidemiology is a good tool for informing, I'm guessing, policy, if you can say these sorts of things. So what do you think we should do to try and make our population age more healthily?
Well, I think we should, you know, clearly focus on those four behaviours as four critical public health targets. And I think we've made progress, certainly amongst adults, in smoking. But what's discouraging is the number of children and adolescents who are taking up smoking. Because if smoking gives rise to, you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths per annum, unfortunately, the smoking industry just has to recruit that number of people to keep their business stable. So I think focusing on the smoking message on people starting is as important a public health issue as trying to help people stop. Clearly, you know, the big furore recently about the moderating alcohol consumption, and that is something that's going up and is a public health issue. Fruit and vegetable intake, there are clearly the five-a-day messages, and we should really stick to those and try and do our best. Physical activity, I mean, in our study, we actually just, the sort of risk group that gave rise to the risk was actually people who are totally sedentary, right, who had a sedentary job and who do nothing in their everyday lives in terms of leisure time activity.
Your traditional couch potato.
Yeah, and I guess the message here is that the public health recommendation, which is to do 30 minutes five times a week, that's a long way from some people's reality. So I think there's an alternative message, which is actually just do some more, because there are benefits to doing something other than nothing.
Even things like hoovering, which I've been told actually burns quite a lot of calories.
Hoovering, yeah, especially amongst men.
I'm sure DIY as well is bound to
DIY, anything you can. Actually, very interestingly, we all sit for most of our jobs. And there's a very interesting recent study about the time spent sitting and its relationship to diabetes risk. And, you know, if we've got a sedentary job, maybe not much we can do about the total duration of sitting. In the same study, what they looked at was if you break that sedentary time, but overall the sedentary time as a totality is the same, people who have more breaks in the sedentary time had a lower risk. And that, I think there may be some important messages there about getting up from our desks and our computers periodically. And I would argue that it's probably good for concentration, but it'd be very interesting if it was actually also good for our physical health.
Well, I'm glad to say that the cafeteria in our office is downstairs, so even if we do go and get a chocolate bar, we have to walk back upstairs afterwards. But you said that drinking is going up at the moment. Is it likely that we are storing up problems for the next generation? Are today's adolescents going to be even more disease-prone than today's pensioners?
Well, I think that, you know, that is the $6 million question. This is really the problem that we face in public health and epidemiology, because we always use the past to predict the future. So the cohorts that we have now, on which we're basing our information about risk, studies like Framingham or EPIC, those studies recruited people maybe 20, 30 years ago when the risk factors were as they were then and medical care was different.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is, what are the current generation going to face in the future? And we don't know. All we can do is say we know that obesity and other risk factors are, you know, incredibly important. And based on our observations from the past, we would say that the current generation, if they don't take some action, and particularly with respect to their degree of overweight, are really storing up problems for metabolic health in particular in the future.
Well, that's obviously something we need to keep an eye on, and we shall stay in touch to find out what you find in the future. Thank you ever so much, Nick. That was Nick Wareham from Addenbrookes Hospital explaining how some very simple lifestyle changes could actually help us all to live longer, healthier lives.
Keeping you abreast of the world's best science, The Naked Scientists.